Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
The publication of Volume 2 of the autobiography of Mark Twain has become a major literary event. The 700-page book is filled with the author's pictures and letters and thoughts he dictated to a stenographer. Among the highlights, his recollections of a dinner with Helen Keller, who he described as the eighth wonder of the world. He also shares his views on writing and speaking, his preoccupation with money, and his contempt for the politics and politicians of the day. It is affectionate and scathing by turns. His curiosity and candor are everywhere on view. It is a great pleasure to welcome Ben Griffin, who is one of the editors of the book, and it is a great pleasure to welcome him to the program. Ben, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
You just so I have this right, the book is edited by you and Harriet Eleanor Smith, and then there are other editors who are part of the Mark Twain Project who have been working on this for a very long time.
There's a team of editors who have been working on the project itself, which is a project to complete a scholarly edition of all of Mark Twain's works. That's been going on since the 60s. And the autobiography has been taking up our time since about 2005.
Give us a sense of how this whole thing came to be, because as I mentioned earlier in the program, this was the author's intent that this not be published for 100 years. The motive behind that being what?
He wanted to be able to feel that he could write whatever he wanted to about people who were close to him or who he hated or loved variously. And he wanted to know that he could write about them honestly and candidly. He felt he couldn't do that unless he imagined a great deal of time going by and their descendants being, you know, dead or uncaring.
So for Volume 1 and Volume 2, what are the challenges in putting a project like this together?
It's very, very complicated in the matter of putting it together. The materials that Mark Twain left behind him for his autobiography are not 100% completed and finished. He sort of left behind a great pile of dictated manuscripts. The fact that they're dictated is one thing that gives us a lot to think about. What we have is typescripts that are transcriptions of shorthand, which are transcriptions of Clemens talking. So there's a lot of special editorial problems that come with the fact that he didn't actually write this out with his own hand. And then, too, there's the disorganization of the manuscripts and the fact that we sometimes aren't sure entirely from the evidence before us whether something is or is not part of Mark Twain's autobiography. Sometimes he would mark things auto in pencil at the top of a manuscript and then leave them alone. But is that an absolute command that this is part of the autobiography? And if so, where does it go?
Mm.
There's a lot of questions like that are part of assembling this work and making it readable for the public.
Is one of the things I found surprising, I mean, given the great interest in Mark Twain, given the love that so many of us have for him and for his writing, I've heard you say that you were completely surprised by the interest and the great success of the first volume of the autobiography.
Yes, well, if we were surprised by it, and we were, then it's because we've been publishing volumes in this Mark Twain edition for so many years. And to us, the autobiography had become essentially just the next volume, the next three volumes, really, of this ongoing critical edition. And when it became successfully marketed as a trade book, it took off, and news stories made it popular, and it was completely extraordinary. And so, whereas we thought, you know, our books, other volumes in the series typically would sell 2,000 copies or something like that, and
right,
we would think that was good. and that was very good. And then this one sold, you know, in its first 6 months, the autobiography volume one sold 100,000 copies, or 500,000 copies.
Half a million.
Yeah, only a half a million. And so, you know, we were dying out there.
And it has to be somewhat reassuring. I mean, not only to know that your work is striking a chord, but also that Mark Twain is still so relevant and so interesting to so many people.
Yes, it is. It's reassuring indeed. When you tell people that you work at the Mark Twain Project, it's not like telling them that you work at the William Dean Howells Project or the George Washington Cable Project. And there aren't such projects, which in a way is too bad. I mean, it's wonderful that Mark Twain's fame and people's love for Mark Twain keeps scholarship and research and reading alive in that area. But it's of course he's not the only great American writer of the time, and so I could wish that some of the love could bleed over into other areas sometimes. So, but yes, it is wonderful to know that he is so relevant to people today and pleases people so much with his really, really incredible personality.
It's hard to read this volume as well as the first one and not get a feeling of how complex he was, because the material is so sprawling in nature. It is very conscious, stream of conscious, if you will, but shows many, many facets, which I would think would be, back to an earlier question, would be a challenge to edit, but also interesting of how relevant it still is.
It's a challenge to edit, absolutely, especially to annotate, which is a large part of our work, is writing annotations to his dictations. In this book, you have absolutely no idea what he's going to talk about next. He'll be talking about Missouri in you know, the 1840s and his childhood, and then the very next paragraph will perhaps be about 18th century Viennese politics. And he's prepared to go all over the place, which means you're going to follow him and go all over the place. It's kind of fun.
And it seems as though he is having fun. do you get that sense?
Absolutely. This autobiography was not a duty, and since he was producing it for 100 years in the future, it was not hack work. It was not something that he was grinding out. It's a labor of love, and it's a unique attempt to please himself completely. And so when he felt like lying in bed in the mornings and dictating about his life or about the morning newspaper or whatever took his fancy, he did it. If he didn't feel like it, he didn't do it. He sent the secretary away, the stenographer and the secretary. He said, no dictating today. Yes, I think it's a really remarkable, tough-minded individual work.
Did you always know that it would be multiple volumes? I mean, just because of the sheer volume of the volume.
Yes, I can remember. I don't know if you know the global audience is interested in matters like this, but I remember early on in the discussions and the planning, we were trying to crunch the numbers of words in such a way that it could be two volumes. They would have been enormous volumes. They would have been like suitcases. By enlarging the size of the volumes and the number of words in them, we were able to make it three. So volume three will be out in a couple of years.
And that all seems right of doing it in that time. So I assume as this one comes out, you're probably more than halfway through the next one.
Exactly, yes. We lap ourselves. By the time there's the publication of volume two, we're deep into volume three.
So with that said, it's another way of asking that the success or the way that you were doing volume one and the success of that had no real impact on how you did volume two.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't change our approach, the editorial approach. We didn't tailor volume one to a mass audience. We didn't tailor it to anything except our own scholarly, or, you know, we like to think they're scholarly precepts. We just wanted it to be done right. and that's how we're going to go forward.
The you note in this that this consists of 104 autobiographical dictations. You do go chronologically, as you did in the first volume, as that ended at the end of March in 1906. And how regular were those dictations?
At first, the dictations are very regular. In 1906 and 1907, they're nearly every working day. And in 1907-08, Clemens starts to lose interest, and the dictations become less and less frequent, and they cease to be dictations, too. A lot of them are, from that point on, they are actually handwritten manuscripts, at the top of which he has written, dictated 3 March 1908. So there's definitely a tailing off in his enthusiasm for the project. But in the period that Volume 2 takes up, he's very much in full flow with the dictating project. Very keen.
Josephine Hobby is the one taking the dictation.
Up until near the end, Josephine Hobby is his stenographer, and is taking the dictations in shorthand and is expanding them later on the typewriter to whole language. Yes.
She has to be, sort of. Obviously, you have your whole career in Twain, but she has to be somewhat of a patron saint in this, isn't she?
We're very grateful to Josephine Hobby. She's a wonderful typist. How often does somebody's typing, get praised 100 years afterwards? She's just a wonderful typist. She's really very smart, and when she's the typist of the dictations, we have many fewer problems than we otherwise might. And one nice thing about the publication of Volume 1 is that sometimes you'll publish something like this, and it'll shake loose some descendants, collateral relatives. We'd never seen a picture of Miss Hobby until Volume 1 came out, and some of her descendants got in touch with us, and now we have a photograph, which we printed in Volume 2. So,
yes.
A small thing, but, a very fitting tribute.
Well, it is a gorgeous volume, as was the first one, and it is now out, and all part of this Mark Twain Papers and Project. And it is the autobiography of Mark Twain, Volume 2, the complete and authoritative edition. It is published by the University of California Press. The third volume will be out in a few years as well. Ben Griffin, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate all your great work and for the entire team and for you sharing with us this morning.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Again, it's Volume 2 of the autobiography of Mark Twain, published by the University of California Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.